The latest meeting of the American Academy for the Advancement of Science was in Boston this February. It held a lot of news about the state of our oceans. To help sort this out, we're joined by an award-winning scientist, Dr. Nancy Knowlton, currently the Sant Chair for Marine Science at the Smithsonian. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Alex.
Well, there were a flurry of announcements about ocean science at the AAAS meeting. Why is this such a hot area of research, do you think?
Well, I think it's a hot area of research because so many different directions of research are heading in the same final destination, which is that the state of the oceans is really bad. And it's because of a whole host of factors, some of which are local and some of which are global, but they all point to really a crisis situation. And this sense of a crisis has been building, but it just came to a head, I think, at this latest AAAS meeting.
Well, there are two issues that seem sort of new to me and likely to our listeners that I'm trying to understand, and both are related to the impact of climate change on the sea life. And I'd like to start by looking at acidification. I knew this endangered billions of shell-forming organisms near the bottom of the food chain, and that's serious, but now it seems it could also create dead zones as well. Am I correct about that?
Well, acidification has a lot of... its direct impacts, as you say, have to do with making it much harder for organisms to secrete their shells. But it may also just slow down their ability to grow and reproduce, even if they can sort of slowly make a skeleton. And some of these things are big, like or create big structures like corals. Others are really tiny, like little tiny members of the plankton that form the basis of food chains. So the repercussions of either eliminating or greatly reducing these shell builders from the tiniest to the largest could be quite substantial. And we actually, to be honest, we don't really know yet what the long-term consequences are going to be. This one of the reasons there was so much energy about acidification at the meetings was because we're just now starting to really collect information that giving us just a hint of what some of the likely consequences are going to be.
Well, what other impacts can we expect as the sea absorbs all the carbon and the excess heat from our greenhouse pollution?
Well, the CO2 has, as you say, two main effects. One is acidification, what sometimes I call the Coca-Cola ocean. Your mother may have told you not to drink too much Coca-Cola because it would dissolve away your teeth. So it's the same principle, and it makes it harder for organisms that need to build skeletons to do so. And then there's the whole issue of warming, about which people have been studying for longer, and so we have a much better handle on exactly how organisms are going to be responding. Some organisms, like corals, are in very serious danger from global warming because they live very close to the maximum temperature that they can survive. Corals have in their tissues single-celled plants that they depend on really for most or all of their food, and those plants start being unable to make food when the temperature gets above about 1 degree centigrade or 2 degrees Fahrenheit over the normal maximum for the area. And so this has led to, since the 1980s, increasingly frequent and increasingly severe episodes of what's called coral bleaching, which is when that relationship between the corals and their plant cells breaks down. Plants are evicted, and then the coral slowly starves to death, and if things don't get better, will die in the matter of a couple of months, or either directly from the heat or sometimes indirectly through disease. So those organisms are very severely affected. Then there are other organisms that might be prompted to, say, shift their ranges, and so you might get the appearance of normally equatorial species appearing in cooler waters. You might get wholesale shifts of ecosystems, including perhaps reefs, for that matter, up coasts. And the changes are so massive. When this sort of thing happened in the geological past, you get wild rearrangements of communities. And it's really difficult for scientists to predict what the total effect is going to be. What we do know is that when you radically change the physical characteristics of the ocean, you often wind up with massive extinctions, and so that is a concern as well.
Well, there's even predictions, and I guess this came out at the conference as well, that the crabs and sharks may invade the Antarctic waters for the first time for species there that have no protection against them.
That's right. I mean, this is why basically the world as you see it is used to conditions as you know it. So whenever you change the conditions, there's almost inevitably going to be reshuffling movements. Some things might do better, but a lot of things will probably do worse. And over millions of years, the ecosystem re-equilibrates and new forms of life appear. But in the short term, which is what the time frame that is of importance to people, it can be very chaotic and messy and with a lot of nasty surprises.
Well, I've heard Dr. James Lovelock saying that the seas may actually become more stable as they warm, perhaps less wave action and less circulation between the deep sea and the surface. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, this is not exactly my area of expertise. I'm really a coral reef biologist. I'm not a biological oceanographer. I know it may sound similar, but they're actually huge amounts of information in those different fields, and people tend to have a better command of their area of expertise. One thing that does seem to be coming out of the biological oceanography world, however, is the idea that the ocean will become more stratified, which is, as you say, the less mixing. And that can be bad for a number of reasons, including the productivity of the surface waters, which people depend on for food.
Well, let's pretend that a big government like the United States or China decided to act to preserve these top world fishing areas, but the budget is limited. Where would we begin? Would we go with greenhouse gas reduction or a trawling ban? Where should we concentrate our attention?
Well, I don't think it's wise to say, okay, we're going to do just this one thing. I think you need a suite of approaches, and it depends to some extent on the problem you're most interested in. I think I'll speak for coral reefs because I have a lot of expertise in coral reefs, and I would recommend for coral reefs a two-pronged approach. One is to really focus on reducing local stresses, and for coral reefs that means improving water quality and reducing overfishing, because by reducing local stresses you make reef ecosystems better able to cope with change and catastrophe. You build what's called resilience. And so it's very, very important to protect environments in such a way that they retain their resilient abilities to recover from the blows that nature inevitably gives, regardless of the role of people. On the other hand, I don't think you can ignore climate change. It's very important to remember that CO2 that we put in the atmosphere today is with us for literally centuries, 400, 500 years. And so you can't postpone that working on climate change, because every day, every week, every month, every year that you don't work to solve the problem of reducing emissions creates a problem that will last literally for centuries. So I think you do have to do both things.
What was some of the buzz at the American Academy meeting with the ocean folks? Did you hear about some other research coming that sounded interesting to you?
Well, there was so much that was going on. It's a little hard to specifically choose just a few. I did think we're starting to learn a lot more about the effects of acidification, and there's a lot of buzz about that, if you will, because our knowledge base is so small. We just don't have much of a sense of what is going to happen, and so any information is really a big improvement. And I think the other thing we're starting to get a better sense of, and this came out in the symposium that I was part of, but I also heard it mentioned elsewhere, is that the problem of these multiple threats, warming, acidification, and the other local threats actually have the potential to really get worse by being synergistic. And the more individual threats you place on an ecosystem in terms of stresses, the worse that they become. They multiply their negative impacts rather than just add up. And for example, one of the talks that was in our symposium talked about the double jeopardy of climate change, of warming and acidification, and that the organisms that were being studied, these little things called pteropods, which are part of the plankton, are an important part of the food chain for fishes in the Arctic and Antarctic waters. These pteropods because they can continue to build their skeletons in acidic water, but they become much, much more sensitive to heat. And so as a consequence, they can deal with one threat, but the two together is really problematic.
Is there something else you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, I guess I'd like to tell your listeners that the situation with the oceans is really grave. In coral reefs, for example, we've already lost about 80% of all the living corals in the Caribbean, and the situation in the Pacific is comparably grim, and that we really need to recognize that this is an emergency. This is code red, code blue, whatever. And if we don't start taking actions both to, as I say, help things locally and address the issue of CO2 emissions, we are not going to be very happy with the world that we pass on to our children and our grandchildren.
Well, thank you a lot for stepping up and saying that. We've been speaking with Dr. Nancy Knowlton, a well-known authority on ocean science from the Smithsonian Institute. Thank you so much, Nancy.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.